Good evening, everybody online. Sarah and Ian and Jason and Miss Julia and Grant and Rachel, thank you for being with us. For whatever reason, the TV's not working, so I'm the only person to be able to look at you. You can look at my ugly mug. Yuck. You scared them all. Good evening.
I'll do it.
So,
Yeah.
I don't know what's wrong with her. Hey, there he is. I'm only to see you because the TV's not working. Or really, the computer's not working. It's not talking to the TV. It used to work. I don't know. I need to get somebody smarter in computers with me. So good to see you. And welcome, Josh. Thanks for being with us. So I was going to play Stump the Priest, and we'll say, let's introduce ourselves just because we have a few new people over the last few weeks.
I'm Autumn.
What?
Chris.
Eden. Oh.
Steven. Steven.
Steven, welcome. Cameron.
Tikon.
Tikon.
Mason.
Rachel.
Rachel. Welcome. Okay. Maggie's here and Rebecca just joined us too. So very good, Josh. So
Cindy.
I said before I came in here, we'll play Stump the Priest in 1 second. I tell you what we say. I was going to say a couple words about Gregory the Theologian. So this in the
That
month
was so mean.
January in the church, we
That
celebrate.
was so mean, Daddy. I think he just muted.
Maybe, I think you're right. So then, so the St. Vladimir Seminary is kind of an important day because in January you celebrate three holy hierarchs, and that's January 30th. But during the month, we have January 1st, we have St. Basil the Great, St. John Chrysostom. I can't remember what day he is, and today Gregory the Theologian. And then because these are three great hierarchs, and on June th January 30th, we have that celebration in the name of the chapel at St. Vladimir Seminary, because it's a seminary that teaches what's three hierarchs chapels, three great teachers of the gospel. But why is Gregory called theologian? How many of the saints are called theologians? Off the top of my head, three. Gregory the theologian, Saint John the theologian. Why? Because his gospels is a theological gospel. And then Saint Simeon the new theologian in the 10th century. So we haven't had a theologian in 10 centuries. You think about 11 centuries, okay? Why? In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. Maybe it's not a funny story, but to me, it's kind of, as a priest, it was. So I was asked to interview somebody who wanted to become an Orthodox, join the Orthodox Church. He was a Protestant minister, and then he was in another denomination, a liturgical, quote unquote, denomination. And he asked to come into church. And so I went down to meet with him, with somebody else, and, the priest that he met, but it was my job to interview the man. I sat down, we had a nice talk and everything else. Great guy. And then he handed me his business card, and it said his name, Theologian. He doesn't understand things like I understand things. Theologia, words about God, knowledge of God. And when we understand theology, there's a saying, one who prays is a theologian. A theologian is one who prays. If you really want to understand theology, you can't do it in a textbook. You can't be, it's not brain here. It's brain and heart. It's brain and the Holy Spirit. Say, if we heard the hymns today, it was about Gregory understanding a theology of the Trinity by the Spirit burning in his heart, or something to that effect, that the Spirit was in his heart. He was a man of prayer, he was a man who fasted, and he was able to articulate words about God. And it's not just because he wrote it that we believe it, it's because the Holy Spirit confirmed it in all of us. Orthodoxy doesn't like decide something. It's not like some really great bishops sit down, hey, this looks really good. Like an architect drawing something out, right? Drawing out there. No, they pray, they fast, they discern things, and then they have to agree to it. And not only agree that group of people, but over time in many people, and then many centuries, many countries, many centuries, etc. Conciliarity. So say, he's called a theologian because he articulated the first words. But all of us, if we're people of prayer, we understand theology. Remember Father John Hopko at seminary. He said, no one can ever, and this is why it struck me funny when I saw this man's card. He said in class one day, I think it was a class, maybe it was a chapel. He said, no one can ever call themselves a theologian. That's something other people present to you. Because who are you to say you're a theologian? You can't get a degree in theology. You can get a doctorate in theology, and those are really smart people, okay? But you still don't call yourself a theologian. It's because you're like the top. And that means you're a really articulate, holy person, you know? And so, yeah, so he said that. So, And he, I think somebody referred to him as a theologian in the book somewhere printed, and he was, you know, humbled by it somehow in some way. There's one thing I'll say about theology. So priests are not theologians. We've got very clear. We just, a bishop defines the word and we preach the word. That's why I can never say anything original. Maybe you've heard me say that before. Or I just repeat what I've learned. That's the same other thing about theology. Anyhow, that's probably good enough now. And, okay, stump the priest. Any questions for me? Yes, ma'am.
I've noticed a couple times that during Vespers, mm-hmm. you have like taken your phone out, like up next to the altar and like looked at, like, it is like, how, I guess I don't understand how that's okay. Like,
I just probably just move from my pocket to the thing, or I'm trying to see what time it is before to get into church on time. I don't know.
Okay. Because I mean,
I do look in here for the music for the day. I've done that over the day. Okay. I've done that too. If I don't have the thing that's out there, but I didn't do that tonight. I know that because I don't even have, oh, here it is. So, yeah. But okay. It's not like I'm looking at anything other than
the time. I'm not assuming that you're
not texting or emailing.
I'm just wondering, like, I guess I don't really understand what you're doing while service is going on.
Well, I'm reading ahead, thinking about what I'm going to say, making sure I know what I'm doing. Sometimes I'm actually praying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no, it's always trying to focus. And yeah. Sometimes I'll sit there. So sometimes during the liturgy, I'll humble myself or embarrass myself before the sermon. I'll reread my sermon during the hymns, mm-hmm. just because I want to make sure in my brain it's fresh. I'm dyslexic, so I'm not the greatest articulate person. So I always need to refresh my mind. So I'll do that. I'll go read through the first two pages of my sermon during the second antiphon, or I'll look at back pages. If I feel something uncomfortable, I'll just go through it in my head. You know, make sure I'm going to say that. So, but that sometimes I don't even know. But it's out of my pocket during liturgy. It sits on the altar in case I need something from it later. Not on the altar, on that stand. In fact, we never put anything on the altar. You know, it's not a table. So, yes.
Good question. What translation of the Bible do you recommend us reading?
Oh, well, I do recommend the original Greek. That's the Orthodox official Bible.
Okay.
Now, that's why when you go to seminary, you have to learn Greek so you can read the original Greek and discuss the liturgy. Now, having said that, the next question I think should be, well, what's the best translation from the Greek? And I'll share with you, when I was in seminary, a number of years ago, it was the RSV, Revised Standard Version. Not the new revised, NRSV. That came out like my first year of seminary. But that, they changed the words because political correctness started. And they changed some, they made some things gender neutral. And then like the NIV is very good for young people, or when you have to read a lot of material at once, like in your seminary, you have to write a paper on, you know, 20 chapters or something, you read NIV because it's more in English, but still that misses words. Because what happens is, it's like when you see things through your own lens, you see the world there. So what happened is some people who translated their theology into it and weren't dishonest with the original Greek. Like the word liturgist is rendered minister in Hebrews. That's wrong. Absolutely wrong. You know, the word is liturgist in Greek, liturgist, something like that. Okay. Christ called the high liturgist or something like that. Or no, the high priest who liturgizes is what it says in Hebrews. So RSV is the most accurate. And now they say, and I don't know what they're using today, but also they say the ESV is very good, which is, what does it stand for? English Standard. So, but I can't validate that. Now, the Orthodox Study Bible is in the NKJV, which is one notch below the RSV in accuracy. Why is the Orthodox Study Bible in that? Because they got the RSV was going to charge me $10 or $20 more for printing because they get their commission. That's owned by Oxford Press because they did the translation. In Oxford, obviously, an academic institution, it's going to be a very good translation. Thomas Nelson Publishing owns NKJV. Thomas Nelson published the Orthodox Study Bible because the chairman converted, or whatever he was, Deacon Michael Hyatt converted to Orthodoxy at one point, and he was asked to do that by some Orthodox. They did a very small run, thinking it wouldn't sell that much, and it's been. And I also do not like the new Orthodox Study Bible footnotes in the big Old Testament one. I think they're just, but maybe it's just because I'm so used to one thing, but I think it's done, they could have done such. I like, when I see footnotes, I want to see half the page on the Old Testament with footnotes. It has just a little bit.
It's so like sparse.
Yeah. Know,
it's explain a lot.
And what they did was they made their translation from the Greek to English, which there's so many, it's called the Septuagint. So the Bible that Christ quotes out of in the Old Testament, and Paul is always from the Greek. And the Greek was the Septuagint version, which is 70 years before Christ, or 70 years before Christ. It was translated from Hebrew to Greek. In fact, at the time of Christ, nobody used Hebrew, the Hebrew Bible. The Masoretic text is into the 4th century. So, anyhow, so we like the LXX. Exactly. I think that's all. Anything else? Yes, ma'am. Silly question. There's no such thing as a silly question.
We have relics in the church.
Yes, ma'am.
Does that go against Christian burial, or how does it not go against
Christian burial? That's a good question. Well, I think let's go with the story and how it worked out. So when they interred somebody, in the catacombs, they would worship over their relics. So that's how we have. So they say, we're going to go to, let's say the first, this is not a true story maybe, but it was going to be somebody. Let's go to, tonight we're going to meet in the catacomb over the grave of St. Justin Martyr and celebrate the services. Do you see? And then when the churches became open, it was take the bones with them and put them in the church and celebrate the, because they're in the kingdom of heaven. And if you read the book of Revelations, it talks about the martyrs under the throne of God, under the altar in heaven. Okay? And so, by definition, martyrs here, the bones behind. So, and everything in the church, and this is my sermon notes for this week, I don't know where it's going to go exactly, but everything in the church is patterned after heaven. So if there are martyrs under the altar there, they need to be martyrs under our altar. So on our altar table, there's the relics of, I don't know who, inside the antimension, the cloth that we open, okay? And I don't know who, because somebody didn't write it down on there, but it's just whatever. There's a few of them that, they just neglect to write it down, because the point is they're relics. When you, in the icon to the left is St. Herman, in our, there's a relic of St. Herman there. If you go in the back of the church, icon of St. Justin, there's a very, very fine fragment of his relics that's given to me by Bishop Essie, here. So we have his relic too. So, so why does the church have relics? Because they're holy. Because you think about it, Paul, was it his napkin people wanted, or was it Peter's napkin? Peter's napkin people wanted to touch and get healed, or the guy? Oh, it was Peter's shadows and Paul's napkin people wanted. You know, it's like I think about Elvis every time I read that. Remember Elvis? Do y'all know the story? Yeah, it's so funny. So, yes, sir.
I think also in the Old Testament, when they're preparing the benefit, this Bible falls into the grave of Elisha, falls on his bones, and he came back to life.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's like it's so the idea is that the body's been graced with the spirit, and that's it. And so we don't make more of it than it can. But yes, that's something that's very un-American to have relics just laying around. I know in Rome, there's thousands and thousands. There's churches with thousands of relics. Of different pious people. Any other questions? So this week we're going to do the anaphora of Saint, of the Divine Liturgy. So, and I'm sorry, guys. Oh, I can still share it online. We just can't look at it. So I'm going to share online. If you don't have the Divine Liturgy with you, I'm going to share online the words only. And, ooh, that doesn't work. I hit the wrong thing. Stop share. I don't think it's working right. Share. Yeah, I want to share this.
There what we you go. Hit was where you want to live.
Ah. Oh. But can you see that now? It says the anaphora. Y'all see that?
Yes, I can see it.
You can see it. Great. Our screen stopped working in here. So, all right. So the anaphora is the high point of liturgy. Anna is to lift up, fora is gifts. Okay, so what the high point of the liturgy is going to be, we're going to lift up the gifts. Does anybody know what page we're on? Can we just